the person who popularized the phrase was John Truslow Adams during the Great Depression. It's not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the tortuitous circumstances of birth or position.
This is the Educational Triage Podcast. Welcome. We invite you to come along with us on an exploration of interviews, issues, and other exciting and relevant topics in education, especially alternative education. They say alternative education is a laboratory for mainstream education. Why? Well, join us every week and listen in as Philip Summers,
aloha,
and I, Tony Hunt, jump in feet first to discuss issues that may affect our classes, students, communities, as well as our teaching. Please subscribe if you enjoy and find relevance in what you experience here. And if you haven't left a quick review, please do. We appreciate your candor and insights so we can improve as we move forward. Now, let's see what's on board today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Educational Triage Podcast. This week, we talk about, is education killing the American dream? And if it isn't, what's its role in the participation of it? So, in order to figure that out, alongside me, we have the wonderful, jocular Philip Summers.
Aloha. Good to see you, Tony.
Good to see you. Hey, so I remember back in the day, everybody says that boomers have killed the American dream. I don't know that boomers killed the American dream. That's a hard one to say. And I know a lot, and I mentioned the title of what we're talking about today to some people, and they looked at me and said, "So you think education is killing the American dream?" Okay. And I said, "Well, what do you think?" No. I don't want to talk about it, but you're wrong. And it's like, okay, so explain to me. Let's talk about it. No, I don't want to.
Because you're wrong. Conversation.
And I said, okay. Well, that's not the way to have an intelligent conversation.
I'm actually asking you to give me the information that I may need. Yeah.
And basically what they're saying is that there is only one thing that's killed the American dream. It's the boomers. Because capitalism, because we've driven everything up so high. So anything that deviates from that narrative, and remember, we talked about critical thinking and how it's making a departure in our culture. This is a significant part of that. Either you agree with me or I'm not going to talk to you. So that's a weird one. Anyway.
That's a fun one.
It is. So
can you somewhat agree with them and then like have a discussion, or do you have to agree with everything they said? I just wondered because there was two premises coming up there that A, it was like the economic side of capitalism, and B, baby boomers. And so I would agree with one and disagree with the other.
No, you need to agree, I think, with everything wholeheartedly so that you can enter into the fraternity, sorority, club, whatever you want to call it, so that you can all sit around bashing. It's never about solutions. It's only about the blame game.
Yeah, that I've noticed that a lot of people are like, okay, something's really wrong. Who do we blame? Well, let's work on the problem first and figure out who to blame, maybe second or third, or maybe never. I don't know. I mean,
maybe we need to figure out what needs to change in order to have that happen.
I would agree. Yeah.
So what I wanted to do with where we're going today is taking a look at the role really that education has played in killing the American dream. And I think it's something that everybody has actually participated in. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's been in education, everybody who participates in education, from parents, it goes to government, it goes to the mm-hmm. student body, mm-hmm. it goes to the faculty, it goes to the banks yeah. and the government. It's everybody. And I think that the reason why I'm saying that is because we have so many students who are so bamboozled that they believe somehow they have a narrative that if they go to college, that they're going to be making over six figures or close to six figures, and they're going to be able to jettison their way up some kind of ladder or just be able to afford whatever. Mm. And that's not what the American dream is, nor is it really all that possible unless you really have the right connections and you have the right set of skills.
Right. Well, let's define what the American dream is, in fact.
Okay.
And because I played it. I believed in the American dream, not in the literal sense of it, but I believed in the hard work. College education is a bit, mm-hmm. is if you get over that college education, you've got a much better shot at better paying jobs. And that your wages would increase with inflation, you know, or would increase with the economy, which they kind of haven't. But and have enough money to send a kids to college, have a vacation, a couple of them a year, that sort of thing, and you know, a car and a house.
Right.
Didn't want much, just that stuff. Yeah.
Right. It's defined, and this is from Wikipedia, take it for what it is. But I think it's a pretty, I believe that this is a relatively decent definition, and it goes on much further. It's the dream of a land in which life should be better and richer and fuller for everyone, with opportunity for each according to ability or achievement.
Yeah, that's a well put. Yeah.
And this, let me see, this is the person who popularized the phrase was John Truslow Adams during the Great Depression. It's not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the tortuitous circumstances of birth or position.
Yeah, that would be it. Yeah, I think that's about right. You get as far as you earn or merit. Mm-hmm. And although there has been that connection in the past of virtue to wealth. And we still believe in that. If you're wealthy, you're somehow more virtuous. And by that, I mean, it used to be literally you were blessed by God. If you're wealthy, you know, they would say, well, God really loves John because he's wealthy. God actually bestowed upon John this wealth. But now it's kind of like a virtuous thing. If you're wealthy, it's kind of, you know, good on you. All right, way to go.
But, you know that
that's
goes
the first woman CEO kind of thing and, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But it's kind of the same thing in a way.
But that goes back to ancient cultures, too, because remember, they used to say that if a child was born blind, it was because of the sins of his parents.
Yeah, that they went to that, too. Yeah, that's the opposite of it. But yeah.
So whatever disability that a child might have, their parents.
That's actually well put. Yeah, because that happens. People will say that. Let's put it this way. We did something with the mentally ill in this nation in the 80s. The institutions were not working, granted, but they were shut down and these people were disseminated into society. And I think we're kind of seeing that happen, but we look at it like as a homeless person, they have a serious mental disability that keeps them from being a normal quote citizen. And yet we kind of put, like you said, we kind of go, yeah. Ooh, they, you know, they're dirty, they're unkempt, they're rude. Yeah, they're under drugs or they're schizophrenic. Yeah, it's not really their fault per se, but we kind of demonize it a little bit. Although that's a little bit of a stretch because there's some behaviors on the streets that are very upsetting lately. You know, maybe that's our own bed that we made that way. I don't know, but
I believe that that's it. I believe that that is the bed that we have made.
Yeah,
because we took a look under the Reagan administration.
Yeah,
they took a look at the mental institutions and they determined that they were ineffectual and that it was almost like imprisoning people. So rather than work on a solution, they deconstructed what they had and took it away. And thereby, because back then people were worried because they said, now you're depositing them back on the streets. And that's what they did. And so the homeless population has been, by and large, not only people who are priced out of a home, but also those people who are mentally ill, who for some God only knows reason, people or government or the health system or whoever has determined that they need to self-manage and they need to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I agree.
Rather than going into something more reasonable, like what about halfway houses? Why not have some kind of structures and implement something where they have some freedoms to help them manage what they're doing, but they also have a home base? And so maybe it's not quite the institutionalized structure that it once was.
Yeah.
For example, what we saw in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and in literary form, the book by Ken Kesey, and in motion picture form with Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher.
Filmed right here in Oregon.
Yeah, right down the road at the State Mental Institution in Salem.
In Salem.
But, you know, that it's sort of like, let's take these away, and then the human detritus that happens.
Yeah.
And I hate to use that term, but the human suffering, I should say. The human suffering that occurs afterwards is incidental. We got rid of the bad thing. Now people can just suffer.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting. Instead of working toward a solution, it's just get rid of the system. Yeah, get rid of it. You know, or slim it down to the size where, you know, it's ineffective. Make it teeny small. All kinds of things. And that, thinking about that, you know, education has kind of become, shall we say, more privatized minded, I suppose. There's what happened is, I believe, a lot of the budgets got cut for state schools. And I know that private schools, their increases are huge over like 35, 40 years in cost. And I kind of believe that that's the way that privatized mind sort of, you know, cuts to the budgets. Now, I can't attest to the private schools, but I did recently, I did some research on that, and I kind of wish I could remember for the life of me. They're kind of in competition for money because the private schools can afford these things. And those that can afford a private school are making private schools sort of compete in ways like facilities, like rock walls, you know, elaborate gyms, a movie kind of theater, really make them cool campuses. And that drives the cost of the private universities up by doing that. But they're sort of competing with each other. It's more of a market for those that can afford it. And those that can't, it's very expensive, like a Willamette University or something. Yeah.
Now, if you remember back in the starting in the 90s and swelling into the aughties, and especially in the teens, schools were really pushing for everybody to go to college. And we were, everybody was drinking the Kool-Aid, and they just were promoting go to college, go to college, go to college. But for a lot of students, that wasn't the answer because one, why would I want to go to college? I have no interest. All I want to do is get through high school. I'm going to be the first person in my family to actually graduate from high school. And for us, that's a big enough deal because I got to support my family and help support my family.
Yeah.
And secondly, what am I going to do? I don't want to go to college. And so then you bring up, well, maybe you want to go to community college or something like that, or maybe take a gap year even. But with this big push for colleges, all of a sudden, there was a swarm of more students who wanted to go to college. And so universities started creating almost, and there were articles published in Time and Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, everybody was talking about it, about how colleges were trying really hard to promote themselves to these students who had extra needs. So they were building rock walls. They made them more into like a resort type atmosphere for the students.
Right. Yeah. And places where you could name your own major.
Right. And so, I remember my brother when he was at Northwestern, he talked about how they had a housekeeper who came in and made their beds and cleaned their rooms.
Ooh, I hope that person got paid a lot of money because
this is back in the 60s. So imagine my chagrin when I discovered that wasn't a reality for me when I ended up at University of Washington. Also, I mean, I did apply at Dartmouth, I did apply at Northwestern, but once I saw the costs of them, that's when I said, I can't do that because in my family, I paid the tuition, my parents would pay the room and board. Mm. And to be honest, that was almost reasonable because going to University of Washington at that time, it was cheaper than University of Oregon. It was $129 per quarter for up to 18 credits. For full time.
Yay.
Then they raised it to $157 a quarter, I think. But that's still not that much money. And books and fees were maybe about $100, $120.
I'll give you an idea how that works. I went to start a junior college. I knew what my degree was going to be, so I had things kind of planned out. But at the time I started, it was $18.90 per quarter for like 12 credits. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
But.
Yeah. It was a little bit more expensive than UW when you went, but still. Yeah. It was a lot cheaper than it is now.
If we're taking a look at how much was room and board at that time, my parents were paying approximately $600 a quarter. For my room and board. So that's $1,800 a year.
Room and board. Yeah.
So if you think about it, we're talking under $3,000 a year for tuition, room and board. And I ran some numbers, and the average cost in 1978-79 at a public university, it was $3,190 to go to a public four-year institution. And that is full-time student, room and board.
12 credits a quarter, full-time.
Tuition and fees. A private nonprofit for a year was approximately $12,680. Mm. Which sounds like a lot, but I want you to also keep in mind that private institutions have endowments. They also have a lot of private contributions that go to them. Public institutions don't have quite as many. And so they tend to have a lot more money. Harvard University, for example, does receive tons of money from the government. They receive approximately, I may be wrong, it's either $400 million or $4 billion per year from the Department of Defense. But they also receive money from in endowments and gifts and grants. And some of the smaller colleges that are private have even more money to grant to students. So if you make yourself, and we're going to talk about this next week with Gary Woolfolk when he's on, because he's going to talk about how do you prepare yourself to go to a college or maybe a trade school and get and not have to pay a cent to go to school. So, and it's not a money scheme or anything like that. It's just playing the game and playing it smart.
It's knowing how to play the game. And that's an interesting thing too. So we finished World War II and two things occur. First off, there's a ton of young men and there's a bunch of women, young women who need to move on with their lives. And so when they got back, they passed the GI Bill. It was mostly, unfortunately, setting back on minority people. That's another story, but it gave those guys free college, or darn near free, and they went ahead and got degrees and became the madmen of the 60s. And the other thing was that the Russians and ourselves were in that race space for space. And so we just went right into science and technology to beat the Russians and be the best at that. So that gave a lot of money and endowments to universities to start programs and advanced science and mathematics. And so that put in everybody's mind that, you know, here's the yellow brick road, high school, and then go to college. You got your high school done, go to college. That's relatively cheap, if not free, if it's a state school. And you can get your degree and then you can join the workforce that's, you know, progressing through the 20th century, which in the 60s, in the 50s, it was, but then it started to slow down. Things changed economically. But yeah, and so they're still saying, go to college, and all the standards are geared toward college ready, even now. And it's been, geez, many, many years since that was really a working model.
Yeah, but you know, there are funds available if people go into, say, into the ROTC, if they go into the military, but that's not everybody's cup of tea.
Well, they cost shifts to private donations and private sources. And so, yeah, if you know where to look, and that's what we'll talk about next week. It's like, the world is your kingdom. It kind of is, you know? Yeah. There's some things about it. I used to tell kids when they went to college, you've got one extra class every quarter. That's the take care of your schedule and take care of yourself class. Know what you're going to take, recheck on everything, get two counselors because one will tell you something that may or may not be true. You got to make sure that's right. Otherwise, you're going to spend 9 weeks in a course that didn't count. Yeah, that can happen, things like that. But that's important to know. And they don't tell you that in high school. In fact, they don't tell us anything in high school, do they?
No, they don't. You know, they allude to some things, but they don't tell you a whole lot because, one, we're not career counselors. Even though in alternative ed, we become career counselors, we become college counselors. But more and more, I began telling kids, go to the community college. It's cheaper. The classes are simpler. Yeah. You can boost your GPA. If you take it seriously, you can take the classes that you're going to, that are going to cost you a lot more money at a four-year university. You take those core classes, you boost your GPA up.
Right. If you trashed it completely and just barely got out of high school, you get a 4 point in your first quarter. Someone asks you what your GPA is. You get 4 point. No one's going to go, what did you get in high school?
No.
they don't ask.
And then
you can reinvent yourself.
And you take those courses and you dabble. You can figure out things that you're really interested in. That's the whole idea. The whole idea is not to lock yourself into any one thing at such a young age unless you absolutely positively know. I know a kid who he's brilliant. He was known by his classmates as brilliant. I would listen to him practice the piano. It was like music from heaven. It was fantastic every single day. I loved it. And he was so young. And when he was in middle school and high school, his parents they both worked, and they worked very hard, and they were able to afford to send him to somehow or other, he applied and he was accepted at Johns Hopkins University to work in the cancer labs where they investigated and worked on cures for cancer. And so, because he was fascinated by that, mm-hmm. and he graduated with top honors from his college prep high school. He was accepted into a very special brand new program at one of the top pre-med schools that paid him a stipend mm-hmm. and basically paid for him to go to university. And he would graduate in 3 years with his pre-med, and he would automatically be accepted into their medical program on scholarship as well. The only thing that had to happen was his father had to pay the out-of-state tuition, which was nominal. And he did that for 2 years, and then he dropped out because he determined that wasn't what he wanted to do.
Good for him.
But his sister, and then he went into engineering, and then he dropped out of that, and he decided that that wasn't what he wanted to do. So now he's doing something completely different. Now, his sister decided she wanted to go to the same pre-med program. She couldn't get into the same pre-med program because they only accepted 9 people, and this is a nationwide kind of thing that they did. And she wasn't able to get into that, but she did not apply for all the scholarships, so the father had to pay full out-of-state tuition for her for 4 years, but she is now working in the medical field.
Right. You know, that's interesting because I was saying that I went to college and that class I had was to make sure I took care of my schedule, and I knew what I was going to do. What I left out was I was 28 when I started. I knew what I was going to do because I was 28. Right. And I didn't waste any time. And that's really critical. A lot of kids get to the schools. It's kind of like by the semester, they've majored in partying and they haven't gotten any grades. And they go home and they stay home. And they have no idea, you know, because that's the first thing that they've been, the first thing they've done where they're on their own. And they're not accountable to anybody but themselves, kind of generally speaking. So they kind of go a little hog wild. And I think there's nothing crazier than an 18, 19-year-old on a college campus. It's like,
well, for many of them, it's the first time they've had any sense of freedom or autonomy.
That's it. They don't have autonomy, and that's the first time. And it's like, and then you know what happens when basically they're still kind of kids. When kids get together and come up with an idea, a group of them will come up with a far dumber idea than any one of them could come up with individually. It's just weird. Yeah. And they do stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, And no one tells them that. They don't. I tell my kids that, you know, well, if you're going to go to the university, I wouldn't, but you know, go to the junior college, blah, blah, blah. But here's what to expect. It's going to be really annoying.
So if we take a look at the differences, though, between the costs.
Yeah.
Between 1978 and today. And what they need to pay, students will be paying per year approximately $30,000 per year today to go to a 4-year university. That's for tuition and fees. And for a private mm-hmm. nonprofit university, it'll be approximately $111,000 and $112,000.
That's at the end of 4 years is a house with way worse rates.
1 year would be an incredible down payment on a house.
Yeah, and 4 years, that's decent size, you know. I think the median house is something like 425 in the whole nation. So that's a little less than, actually. It's more than a house in the median price range. Yeah.
So. Whoa. If you think about it, we shove kids. Okay. Think about where we started. We talked about how they destroy these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Now they are shoving kids into these into other institutions, the institutions of learning. They're telling them to do these things. And kids need to borrow a heck of a lot more money, but they don't have financial literacy. That is not one of the requirements to graduate. We also don't push how many of the kids are required to complete the FAFSA. How many kids are explained and how many of the parents understand the scholarships, grants, all the other modes of financing a post-secondary education, whether it be trade schools, whether it be university or college, whatever.
Well, something occurred to me too. So you're going to borrow this money. You need a cosigner. If you're a student, and that's ironic, you're an 18-year-old that's making these amazingly crazy decisions that are like monumentally huge financially, right? And you have no financial literacy. So you get your cosigner because you've got the income of like a paper route.
If they even have that, or Burgerville or McDonald's, whatever.
Yeah, right. McDonald's. Oh, I'm going to give this kid a chance at 100K a year. No, the parents like are the cosigners. And I suspect that there's a gigantic catastrophe coming real soon when a lot of parents are going into retirement, can't pay their kids' loan fees anymore. And the kids somewhere in the middle too, because it's the parents of these kids at this time that are paying these as well.
They're except the parents are also to blame.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's the game they think they need to play. My kid goes to college, they'll be fine. And I tell them, all my parents are like, you know, college this, college that. They don't think about trade schools, junior colleges. That's all well-kept secrets. We talked about that. Being an electrician while you figure out your life is a pretty decent way to earn a living. I mean, you may stay an electrician your whole life, or you may go, no, I'm ready to go to college after 10 years. But you've been making a lot of money.
My brother was I brought this up before. My brother was talking to the guy who was doing, you know, because they paint the letters on the doorways and the windows for offices.
Yeah.
And he was talking, he met the guy and he was talking to him as the guy was painting the office doors. I don't know how else to say.
Yeah, the stencils on the doors.
But he was talking to him and he said, well, tell me about yourself. And the guy had graduated with honors with a master's from Reed College, which is not an easy school to get into. It's pretty prestigious. And he graduated and he determined that he did not want to pursue his degree. He wanted to go into something else, and painting, doing sign painting or whatever it is called, paid really well. Yeah. And so he had his own business and that's what he's been doing. And he loves it. But my brother and he, they would sit around, they would talk politics, they would talk about all kinds of things and philosophy, what have you. But what you go to school and what you learn is not necessarily what you're going to be doing when you get out of school.
Right. Yeah. And it was like that for a lot of the periods in the 50s and the 60s. If you had a college degree, if you went into business, it'd be nice to have a business degree or advertising. But if you did have a college degree, it was like, oh, well, you have a college degree. You know, I don't care what your major was. You know, you showed that you could do something for 4 years, be dedicated and hardworking, and good on you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that was the gateway to a pretty decent job, any college degree.
The thing is that we have taken away autonomy from students so much. And mommy and daddy, and I'm sorry to those who think I'm being patronizing, but I am on purpose. Mommy and daddy take care of everything. And so these kids are so coddled. And so when it comes time for them to understand what it is that they're doing, that they don't know how to stand on their own 2 feet. And sometimes it happens when they turn 18 and mom and dad say, hey, you're on your own. The kid has no structure, no scaffolding around them to help them. And so they're kind of tossed to the wolves. So there needs to be this integration of child rearing, which needs to happen. Schools are not the child rearers. We're not the nannies. The parents have to do their part.
And morals and behaviors.
The parents need to be doing their part of raising these kids and supporting the schools by shoring up the skills at home and making sure that kids are reading, that they know how to write, that they can do things, not keep them infantilized with games and what have you. But then the kids go in, they think they're going to get a social justice degree. They're going to get a degree in something that doesn't really make anything. And yet they graduate, they find a job in a private nonprofit that pays them maybe $30,000, $32,000 a year, and they've got $200,000 in loans. They can't possibly pay
that off. That's a very, very, And I mean, society that tells you, do what you like to do, get paid for it, you'll never work a day in your life. But you're right. Yeah, if you want a college degree in fine arts, you know, it's a limited job market. It used to be that any college degree would be like, hey, good on you. But now it's kind of a very specialized job market. You know, for example, mine, you know, was education. My master's was in teaching. You know, it didn't make any sense to get, you know, I don't know, master's in accounting or anything. It's because I wanted to teach. Well, so it's very specific.
Here's one idea that I had, and this may be a little off topic, but if you take a look at some of the degrees that really don't pay well, and yet they are part of the major infrastructure that we have. If students get a degree in teaching and in education, and if they can pass muster and they can work for 10 years with that teaching degree and that master's in teaching, all expenses go away. But they have to teach for those 10 years.
That was an opportunity I took took advantage of. A 20% reduction in my loans every year. I worked with above a certain percentage of special ed kids, which was no problem in alternative ed. So over 5 years, it was just forgiven. However, my master's was not, and that's a different story altogether. But
see, yeah, if they were to do expensive. That, then that makes sense. If you go after a degree that is not a wonderfully marketable skill, and that's what that's your money, you can spend your money on that, but we need to make sure that people have their eyes wide open when they go in there, and schools are not doing that. Schools are leading them into, in a sense, the slaughterhouse and taking them there. And the parents are following along because for some reason or other, parents think that schools are the holy temple of information and they're not.
Yeah, you and I know they're not because we're actually in education, but everyone around us is, you know, that's what you do. Your kid graduates high school and you send them to college. That's the middle class thing to do. I mean, everyone aspires to that sort of thing, yet we know it's not very economical in many, many cases.
Except
anymore.
One of my students who graduated in the trades when he was 19, started his own company with his father. He was running the company. Yeah. Dad helped him out. He made $500,000 his first year.
Wow.
What is this secret sauce that this student had? He worked approximately 18 to 20 hours a day because he was doing paperwork. He was managing crews. He was going out doing marketing. He was doing everything. He was exhausted.
Yeah, he worked hard.
He was doing roofing. He knew how to roof houses. And his father knew how to roof houses. Mm. And he knew how to talk to people. And he knew how to work with people.
Yeah.
and he knew how to sell himself. And so he was able to make that much money in his first year. Does that mean that everybody should go out and do roofing? No. It means if you have a skill that is marketable, use it. If you're going to go to college, know why you're going to college and figure that part out. Yeah. If you have the money, if your family has that kind of loot, then by all means, go there, party it up. But don't tell other people to pay for you if you don't know what it is that you're going to do.
Well, that's it. You know, that's ironic because that's kind of a rags to riches story. I guess it might be. I imagine, you know, the person you're talking about didn't start with much to begin with. I know a guy, he actually started in an affluent neighborhood. And he went to, I believe he went to college, or maybe he didn't go to college. Anyway, he wanted to landscape. And so he started a landscaping business and started serving the people of the community. And now he's got like a fleet of trucks. So, you know, he's the gardener of like the area, and it's an affluent neighborhood, you know, and he went to school there and everything. He just never went to college. So like you said, it was a ton of work because it is landscaping, but now he's got, you know, trucks with his name on it and lots of employees. I think his sons even work for him now. There you
but
go.
See,
so,
and the thing is that did he go to school? No, he never went to community college. He didn't go to university. He knew what he knew and he was smart. Going to college does not make you an intelligent person.
No, it just kind of punched a ticket for a while, but now the ticket.
Well, it depends on which ticket you get.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But like, remember I pointed out back in the 50s and 60s, you could get any kind of college degree and it was pretty transferable. Right. Like my brother went to Brown and he got an English degree, you know, yay. But he ended up working in tech and with computer programs at a power company. So it's kind of like, okay, well, you went to Brown. Okay, you're hired. We don't care what your major was. But yeah, it's kind of like that. It used to be. And it still is networked. The Ivy League schools, pretty much, you can went into one of those. The network is so intense.
My brother went to university and he got his degree in intellectual history. Really? Then he took a gap year and then he saved money and he went to law school and he became an attorney. Another brother went to college because my parents told him he should be going to college, and he didn't do so well his first year in school. He went to another school, was not doing well. My mother said, you know what? You need to come up here. You need to go to community college and try to figure things out, maybe take a gap year. And she said, maybe you need to go in the military. And he did that. And my mother was not very happy that he joined the Navy. But he did. And so, yes, he served in Vietnam. And then my other brother went into university. And I believe he had scholarships. And he went in there playing music. He was going to be a music major. And he was doing really well until an ill-fated day when he decided to be I don't know how to say it. He decided that it would be a good idea to do something really, really stupid. And I'm not going to go into the details.
But it
stopped his music. It stopped his ability to play his instrument as well.
I've known him.
And
like
he.
That.
And so he had to figure something else out, and he ended up becoming a CPA, which was a great fit for him. So when you go into school, it's not necessarily exactly what you're going to be doing. My brother, who went into the Navy, he then got out. He got a multidisciplinary degree. He was great with sales. He worked as a DJ. He did all kinds of things. And he was one of those people that no matter what he did, money came flowing towards him. And he did extremely well. And he ended up working and running car dealerships. And we're not talking small ones. Yeah. And then he became a problem solver where he would go into dealerships and he would turn them around. And that's what he did post-retirement. You find right. out who you are, because a lot of our students don't even know who they are yet. And we still have teachers right. who look at them and say, you know what? You have this incredible talent. You do have that talent. But is that really what you want to do? Go out and explore the world. I think it's brilliant. And I believe Europe, it's quite common for students to have a gap year before they go anywhere. Because it helps them create some semblance of an identity. And they learn more. And it gives them agency where they can actually think. And it might seem philosophical yeah. or whatever, but if a student graduates from high school and they say, this is what I'm going to be doing, and they take a year out of school, it gives them a better perspective on how the world works. If they're mm-hmm. living with mom and dad, that doesn't give them any perspective. If mom and dad are catering to their every whim and every need. Mom and dad can jump back in at the end of that year.
Earn enough of a living.
What's that?
Well, you can't earn enough of a living as an 18 or 19 year old to get your own place. So a lot of people are stuck at home.
No, they go out and they get a place with friends. I know plenty of people at 18 and 19 who are.
But not their own places, you know. So it's just that. It's just really tough these days if your rents and things like that. They just don't have the income. So they usually pool
Well,
it.
Yeah. But we did the same point, thing.
Yeah. I did.
How was that any different than what we did?
It's a good point, I suppose. I think it's a little bit more economically difficult these
days. I don't
think
so. But, rents are expensive, but still.
Yeah.
When I went to university,
I think there might be a scarcity of places.
I could not find housing when I first went to university. Yeah. My buddy Tim and I, we went looking for an apartment. We found one. It was expensive. It really pulled hard on the purse strings. And because it was one of the few things that was there. It was a one-bedroom, very tiny apartment. But we weren't the only ones who had a one-bedroom tiny apartment in that complex, because there were other people. The only people who were singles in there were older adults. The rest were university students who were pulling their money and living hand to mouth because we were poor.
You're not
supposed to be able to live a middle-class existence when you're going to university.
Well, I'm saying that they don't. There's not some of the resources to even have that poorer lifestyle. The rents are too high. There's no housing. It's just, I think it's a little different. I can't stake my claim on that, but I don't think, back in my day, it was, real hard too. It was, but I think it's a little harder now. I do know that people aren't leaving the home. They're staying living with their parents longer.
Why would you want to do that?
And there's a bunch of reasons for that. I didn't want to do that, but some people are fine doing that.
I just don't get it because I don't understand why parents need to have their children stay at home with them. And I know parents who say, I don't want my kids living here, but they're living here. And I say, well, why don't you give them a due date? Oh, I can't do that. They're my children. It's like, that's why they're here. You say one thing, but you do
that's
another.
That's true.
But
you do have to say that. You have to draw that line and say, I'm willing to risk
but
this.
But getting back to tuition and the costs and student loans, do you know that the first student loan in the United States for university was offered by Harvard University?
I didn't know that.
It was to help cover the books and fees at 0%.
Wow.
And I'm going to say it was back in 17-something. Or maybe it was even as late as 1832. However, later on, had John D. Rockefeller, who said that they needed to have the workforce and they needed to have a well-educated workforce as well, along with Henry Ford.
Yeah.
And he proposed that we start the student loan program, but it wasn't supposed to be the behemoth that it has become.
Yeah.
So.
It got
so
big.
So here's the problem.
And it became very profitable.
Here's what we need to look at. We need to look at whether or not we are truly doing a disservice to our students in the schools by telling them to go to university as soon as they graduate. Mm. Are we co-opting? Are we complicit? That's the word. Are we being complicit in the demise of any future earnings that they have? We should probably have financial literacy there. We should probably advocate more for a gap year. We should be working harder with community colleges to maybe help students earn college credits, because right now that's only allowable for specific students. And sometimes there are scholarships for students who can't afford it, but there are also, it's also a lot of work in order to get credits for writing 128 or maybe one of the math programs or something, because they have to have access to that. And that's not offered in all schools. But and that takes some of the, that takes something off of having to do that. But can't they work with the community colleges in order to help students become more entrenched in looking at trades and going through the trade programs and helping those students,
yeah,
and actually mm-hmm. becoming a service to the community rather than determining that the community is there to service them? And the university should also be looking at that as well, because we don't have, I'm going to say that we have an intellectual dearth. We don't have, we're not putting out as quality a student anymore at the universities because we don't have as much diversity of thought. We don't have the thinking. We have a much more complicit and compliant population that comes out that really doesn't know a great deal, and they don't have the cultural literacy that people once had.
Perhaps. It's a changing world.
It is a changing world.
I'm not young anymore, so I don't know. I remember, though, when the oldsters would talk about what a crappy generation we were, I'd kind of go, hey, screw you.
But, you know...
They may be right.
Every
hey, screw you.
But you know what? Every older generation has said that about the next generation.
I think so.
But
yeah.
If you take a look at yeah. what students were studying in high school in 19, mm. trying to think, yeah, back in the 20s,
yeah,
and compare it to today, there's really yeah. no comparison. It's like
There was only a few manners of delivering curriculum back then, though. Now we have all kinds of project-based and alternative programs and things. Most of it was rote, sage on the stage, memorization, examination. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit better at learning today. But, yeah, I mean, I got a granddaughter who's kindergartner, and she's doing addition and subtraction into two digits. So it's like, huh? I believe that was third grade for me, mm-hmm. second grade for me, or something like that. It's, you know, early education. We should probably talk about that sometime. But that's really made a big difference. Preschool, yeah. things like that, access to education.
Well, we did talk about that with Rosemary Allen.
Oh, yes, we did, didn't we? That's where I learned it. No, I said it's a fascinating subject. I know I was learning it somewhere. It's really great stuff. Oh, yeah, on this very episode. Yeah, it's just made such a huge difference. I've seen it too. I don't know how we compare. So I do know that there was a lot of intellectual content back in the day. You know, a lot of Shakespeare. You know, a lot of grammar. We dissected sentences grammatically.
Oh, I love that. I love doing that. For me, that was a blast.
I didn't like it at all.
Okay.
See, I think it's a fourth grade or
something. I want to point out that what's really funny is one of the people who gave me the hardest time about the topic that we're going on today is somebody who got their GED, was homeless, had and was a teen parent, who now owns their own house, has a car, is very financially literate, doesn't make hundreds of thousands of dollars, but is bitter because they want a bigger house. And so the American dream for them is that they should be able to afford a bigger house. And I said, you know, considering your circumstances, you have done incredibly well.
That's very true.
And they said, well, how come you can afford that house and I can't? And I said, because maybe
I chose a career.
It's because of being where I was when I was and taking advantage of the situation at the time.
Yeah. Well, and another thing about that is houses were, remember, they were very available with those terrible mortgages and the 2008 collapse. But a lot of those homes that are still around were built around that time. And I remember these really big homes being built. And my ex and I used to go by these houses going, who gets in these houses? I mean, you and I are both working. You're a professional. I'm a professional. I can't afford this house. How are they getting this house? So there's that expectation of you just keep moving upward and onward and upward and bigger and kind of like everything's bigger in Texas kind of attitude. And it's like, not unless you get the income.
Well, part of that.
You don't necessarily get the bigger
house.
But
part of that, too, is that you move into a house, you build up equity in the house. Because if there's one thing there's never going to be more of, it's land, right? And so you build up equity in the house and then you sell it. And then you take that equity and you put it towards the next house.
Exactly.
And you also have savings.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. But.
That is.
But that's. A house and material things are not the American dream. The American dream is for you to work hard to attain and to be. What did we say it was? Do you remember?
I know what I was going to say, but it's, you know, the level of which you attain or achieve. You attain to the level you achieve. I mean, and nothing will stop you.
Right.
You know, if you're really getting after it, you should be rewarded for that. I don't know if that's true. That's a different discussion, but that should be.
You're able to
dream.
Attain the fullest stature of what you are innately capable of and to be recognized by others for what they are. Now, not everybody's going to be able to afford the same thing.
Correct.
My brothers have all had much bigger houses than I have, much better cars than I have. My parents pinched pennies, but they were characters of the Great Depression. And so they started by pinching pennies and doing things and putting things together and taking advantage when they had money, they used it in very good ways. My dad was terrible with money.
Everything was just in short supply. It's just everything from money to stuff.
My dad was awful with money, but then he became much better later on. And so they were able to work together as partners, and they were able to afford certain things. And so I look back on it, and my parents used to tell us that we are quite poor because we would have pancakes for dinner sometimes. And then I look at the houses where we lived. Yeah. Oh my God. We lived pretty darn well. But my parents never saw that. They that wasn't how they viewed the world. And I think that we need to change the way that people view the world and get out of this materialism kind of bubble.
Yeah, I would agree. Chase. The chase for better, bigger, harder, faster, whatever.
Yeah, because everybody has become a victim of marketing.
The chaser, chase for more. It's very true. It's very true, this, you know, marketing. And like I said, these houses were extraordinarily big at foyers. I'm going, who buys these things? I mean, we're not talking about just big. We're talking about, whoa, three-car garage, foyer.
Philip, you come to my house, and we will walk two blocks over, and I will show you homes that have go-kart tracks, tennis courts, and swimming pools. I've seen that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're huge. They're estates is basically what they are.
Basically estates,
because I have those around me.
Yeah, that's very strange, because back in the day, even if you were uber wealthy, you just lived in a modestly bigger house. You didn't actually build an amusement park around your house.
Right. But see, I have my neighbors. Yeah. I'm the poor person in my neighborhood. I'm a poor pensioner. My neighbors are making mid six-figure salaries. Their annual household income is mid six figures. Why? Because they have skills. We have internet security. We have project managers for internet companies. We have people who do product management for other developments for software. We have medical. We have engineers. We have a lot of different people. And then there's me. Poor little me.
Hey, you're a professional too.
And a professional means that you're paid for whatever you do.
Yeah, your teacher, lawyers, doctors, engineers, designers. They're
everybody's a professional. If you get paid to roof the house, you are a professional roofer.
Yeah, economically, that's not the correct
phrase. Well, it is. That's what a professional
is. You do it for a living. But a professional technically is a person with a college education who works with...
Well, that's because they've manipulated the definition.
Figure positions.
It used to be...
Oh, yeah.
It's the difference between being a professional and an amateur.
Yeah. They just said there's laborers, there's professionals. Right. It was just a way of classifying people. It's probably dated to first world, third world. That's dated probably as well.
So anyway. Terrible.
We're the first world.
Hopefully we brought to light some different ideas and got people's little clocks in their heads working and thinking about things. It's a combination of government, parents, schools.
Yeah, it's a societal thing. Every counselor is pushing college, and I'm like, why are you doing that to everybody? Yeah, I can see in this classroom, I can see these six kids right there. They're definitely college bound, but the rest of these 20 kids, I'm not so sure what they want to do.
Well, it's not like you get a kickback for that.
Yeah, although it's something that they feel they must do. And I tell the kids, hey, you know, like you said, a lot of decisions to be made. You don't have to go into college right away. And in fact, I wouldn't if you don't know what you want to do.
Yeah,
it's a lot of money spent on something you may or may not use.
Mm-hmm. And I know kids that have gone into the military and they're finding out other things that they think that they want to do.
Yeah, yeah. And the military doesn't give you as much college money as you might want to expect either. So that's not a free ticket to just, I'll go there and then I can go to college for anything.
Well, actually, they're getting their training in the military. So when they come out, the amount of training that they're going to need is minimal.
Yeah, well, it gets reduced. But yeah, I know for a fact that if you do medical, even like 18 Delta, which is the special operations medical field, you can only, I think you come out only as an LPN. In the civilian life, as a licensed practical nurse, you don't get an RN.
But you're on your way.
So, yeah, you probably got 2 years ahead. Yeah, big time. But then again, you've probably been a med tech for 10 years. But anyway, you probably just stayed.
But you're still being paid for it while you're working and getting and going for that degree too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the military, if you're a medical technician, you're still an officer. You get pay grades, you get the retirement and all. So it doesn't matter what your MS is. Yeah, that'd be a good way to go. Except in times of war.
Well, that's what I told one of my students. I said, are you going to be deployed? And he said, no. They need me over here. He said, because I asked the same thing. And they told me, no. I said, okay.
You got a skill.
So.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, that's true.
So next week, we meet up with Gary Wolfolk from wolfolkworks.com and the author of Before the Application. Great book, something that every single parent who believes they have a college-bound student to get their hands on and to read before your student starts high school. If your student has already started high school, get your hands on that book. Yeah. And we will see you next week when we talk to him about these lambs to the slaughter and how to prevent that slaughter and just how all of this comes about. It's a great story. Until then.
This book can save you thousands of dollars.
And sleepless nights. And we're not just plugging the book, because it's so brilliant and it's so simple. But
and the information's all together there. He's got it together, and it's stuff that they don't tell you. Like we were talking about.
Yeah. So, until next week, keep your feet on the ground while you reach for the stars. Adios. Thank you, Philip.
Aloha.